marching at the dawn of the day. All the darkened kittens, the mill of gray, all touched by the radiance that the sun discloses. Oh, hear the people singing bread and roses.
Hi, it's 6 p.m. and you're listening to Bread and Roses. And this KBOO program has been made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Oregon's Children's Theater presenting the world premiere of The Giver, the story of a boy learning of the tragic sacrifices his community has made for safety and security. The Giver runs March 5th, 11th, and 12th, 2 p.m. at Keller Auditorium, 222 Southwest Clay. Tickets are at 503-228-9571 or Ticketmaster.com. And this play is appropriate for ages 10 and up. Information about The Giver can also be had at octc.org. So, my name's Crystal, and I'm your host for tonight. And I'm calling tonight's program Tales from the South Pacific. And that's because I was fortunate enough to travel there a couple of months ago. And while I was there, I interviewed a few Oregon women who were there volunteering for a couple of different organizations. So the first part of tonight's program will be about Rarotonga, the largest island in the Cook Islands. It's a group of 15 islands spread out across a vast stretch of the South Pacific, between Tahiti, hundreds of miles to the east, and Tonga, hundreds of miles to the west. And so we're going to play a CD of the interview I did. The first person you'll hear, though, is Anita Allen. And she's a young woman who is native to Rarotonga and who heads the local office of Global Volunteers. So in this interview, we'll also hear from Nancy Barron and Sarah Wu, two Portlanders, former Portlanders, I guess, who've moved up the gorge a bit. And then later on in the hour, we'll hear from Bend resident Lisa Nash. And then after our Rarotonga part of the program, we'll hear from about Tonga from some people who are from the Tongan community. So here's the first interview. When you're ready, Chris. Thanks.
Kia ora ana. I'm the country manager for Global Volunteers, which is an American organization, and its head office is in Minnesota. I've been involved for pretty much 2 years now. They wanted to find a local person. A local person knows more about the culture and the language and knows what to do and where to go and who's who. So it makes the project or the service program, I should say, a lot more interesting for volunteers that come from a foreign country. And when the previous country manager, Tom Coogan, who was from Chicago originally, heard about me through a previous community partner, which is someone that we work with, he emailed me, and I was at the time in New Zealand working for World Vision, just letting me know that they are looking for someone, a local person, to come and take over the program, and would I be interested. So I looked up Global Volunteers on the website and thought, well, this is something that I'd really like to have a look at and have a go at. Sounds very interesting. So I sent my CV in. Working for World Vision for 3 months on contract. I had been previously working as a volunteer with World Vision for a number of years. I got involved through my sister, who was also a volunteer and then employed by them. I was looking after the 40-hour famine, which is New Zealand's largest fundraising event. They have that every year. some countries have a 30-hour famine and others have a 20-hour famine, but the children do a 20-hour famine in New Zealand.
So by that you mean that you would not eat for that number of hours?
We encourage people to go without something that they either really enjoy or really need for up to 40 hours. And that can be anything from food to not talking to going without technology for up to 40 hours. And people will sponsor them per hour to do that. And that money goes towards looking after projects in third world countries, helping get children off the streets, getting them into schools, building wells for them, teaching them how to maintain those wells and look after themselves. So World Vision is all about helping people look after themselves so that when the people that have been working with them can move out, they don't have to worry about anyone surviving and not having learned anything from them. Well, Global Volunteers is all about going to small communities where we are invited. We never go anywhere where we're not invited. We have to be invited by the local people to do what we are asked to do and how we are asked to do it. We like to work one-on-one with the local people because although a work project is very important, it's mostly the relationships that we build with people, because Global Volunteers' philosophy is that through building relationships, we make friends with our neighbours around the world, and through that, when we get to understand each other, we learn about each other, we realise that we are far more alike than we are different. And if there should be any friction with friends, it's more easily forgivable. So through that, then we should be able to bring more peace in the world and justice.
Well, it sounds wonderful and very much in keeping, I think, with the philosophy of a lot of the people back in Portland who will be listening to this program. I found out about you, of course, through a couple of Oregonians who are here volunteering, Nancy and Sarah. I don't know if they're going to want to speak with us in a little bit, but why don't I ask you to tell us what some of the specific programs are that you're doing now.
In the Cook Islands, we have a variety of projects that are available for volunteers. In fact, I counted the other day up to 26 community partners. A community partner is an establishment or an organization with whom we have a relationship with. So that includes schools, non-governmental organizations, conservation projects. So primarily, we go into schools to help with a reading program. Each school has their own reading program or their own wish list for having volunteers come into the schools. So you could be working one-on-one, tutoring a child in English or even sometimes maths. You may be assisting a teacher in a class and working on perhaps an art project. You may, if you are a professional teacher or have a professional skill that can be used to teach students, you may be asked to take a class or a few classes. And other than that, we work with non-governmental organizations doing all sorts of things, from data entry to typing up documents to other administration. If people come with specific skills in mental health, they can help to either see clients or help write grants. We have volunteers that have put together databases, and there is a great need on the island at the moment for people who do have ICT skills.
What's ICT skill?
Information computer technology. I was beginning to wonder if I would remember what ICT stood for. But we have people that come and slash trails to keep, one thing with this planet, that everything grows. Got to keep the weeds back, so that's one thing that is always a continuous need, given that it's not raining. But we have so many so many projects. You could even go and visit some of our mamas, which is a term of respect for our elderly people here, mama or papa. Unfortunately, I tell our volunteers that our papas here in the Cook Islands are too macho to go to a day centre. So they're still at home probably working in the taro patch or... I don't know if you know what a taro patch is.
Yeah. No, I saw a taro patch. It looks a little bit muddy, actually.
Lots of fun. Very hard work, though. But just spending time with the elderly. I visited the mamas before going away for Christmas last year, and they wanted to wish me well, and so they said a prayer. It gave me, they blessed me before I went, and then someone gave a bit of a speech for me, and the mama said, "Thank you very much for bringing your friends from overseas, for they have brightened up our lives." And I thought that was very special. So that's what some of our local people here think of the volunteers that come, just to spend some time with them.
Well, that's wonderful. And, I think there's so much to be learned from the elderly, too. It certainly is a two-way street, isn't it?
That's right. Volunteers thoroughly enjoy meeting the mamas because they learn about what life was like here in the Cook Islands many, many moons ago and what it was like to live in the outer islands. Some of them have travelled afar and know that they can't do that anymore, and so they'll share their stories about their travels. Others have never left the Cook Islands and so just want to learn about what's it like to live in America.
Ah, that's sounds very good. We try to respect our elders in the U.S. and I don't know how good a job we do, but I know that more of them in our country are banding together and doing political action, and so we're glad for that because we think that we need the wisdom of our local mamas also to guide us. Well, I wonder if we can get a word or two from Nancy. You just got in last night, didn't you?
Right. Well, yes, we spent night before last all together awakened on the plane. So yesterday was our first day here.
Mm-hmm. And you volunteered here before.
Yes. Yes, that's worked very well. In fact, last year, the Mental Health Center requested some assistance, and I was able to help them put together a survey about their services for the island and help them plan then a way of administration. And they actually were able to put all the pieces together and carry that out very nicely, have sent me the data. I've worked on it some from afar, and my first task with them back this year will be to help finalize the reports. So after we do that, we'll work some on the information system for the center. And it's a wonderful way of relating to people, so we're not just intruding and touristing around, but we actually get to work with people and relate to them on a very genuine and human basis. It's just wonderful.
Oh yes, as Anita was saying, the connections that you make with each other by doing this kind of work has got to go for the good of the whole planet.
Yes, I think it's a wonderful way to wage peace. I love that phrase. Peace is not the absence of war. It's the presence of a very positive interrelational lifestyle. And this is a wonderful way to help that along.
Yes. Well, thank you so much. Would our other volunteer that's present today be willing to say something?
Oh, I'm always willing to say something.
This is Sarah.
I'm Sarah. Nancy and I were going to Australia and wanted to go scuba diving someplace, but also do a volunteer project of some kind. So I just typed in on Google search, South Pacific volunteer, and we came up with Global Volunteers in the Cook Islands. And we were so very pleased with our experience last year. Anita is just an inspiration, as is her family, who have all been so very warm and welcoming, that we just couldn't resist coming back and doing another round. And it is, as we say, you need to be flexible. Things won't go quite as quickly or smoothly as you might be used to, but that enriches your experience also.
Yes, I really do appreciate hearing about it. And, of course, I'd never heard of Global Volunteers until you folks talked about it. So this particular visit, Sarah, do you have some ideas of what you're going to be doing, or are you waiting to hear about that?
Oh, I've heard a lot about lots of things, but I know that isn't the final word. First of all, I'm going to be painting again. Seems wherever I go someplace, people need some painting done, and so that's one of the things I'm going to be doing. I also am planning to help with the trail building or reestablishing. They had a record number of hurricanes last year, and so there's a tremendous amount of cleanup. It's lovely to look at the island. It's so freshly spruced up, but there's a lot of work to be done. And also there is a whale study organization that I hope to do probably some clerical kinds of works to help maintain it.
Well, thank you so much, all three of you. It's going to be very interesting to the folks back home. Any final words? Yes, Anita.
I just thought of something that I wanted to say. It was the first time I could go to the airport to... I've had a number of volunteers return this year, and it's always lovely to have volunteers return. But it was the first time that I went to pick up volunteers, and it was only returnees coming. So I didn't need to have my Global Volunteers sign up, and I didn't feel like I was going to just go and pick up Global Volunteers. I felt like for the first time that I was going to pick up friends who were just coming here to volunteer. And that's what we're all about, people making friends around the world, and we do that by helping. And it's nice that they have wanted to come back, and you never know, we might see them again.
Well, I bet you will. And besides that, some people who are listening may very well be interested in this. This is a very friendly place. This is just the second place I've stopped in the South Pacific, but I've certainly enjoyed the people here. Thank you so much, Anita.
You're very welcome.
That was the interview, and now we have some music from a local Cook Islands group, Te Kurere Māori. And that's coming up next. This song is called Awa Iki. And Awa Iki is the legendary home of the Maori and other Polynesian peoples. So here it is.
Oh, pure ora, e marai koroa. τώρα η ώρα μας. Όταν έχω κόρερο μαουριτέια, τε κόρερο ιό, του μου δε βάρο βάρο. Ιε, κοκό. Όταν έχω ότε κάρα ή που τα μαγιέτε κόρερο μάρο. Αμπαϊ κοίτε βαρουαρία να τένουα. Τουπούραγα τουπούραγα τένουα. Τουπούραγα τουπούραγα τένουα. Tupuranga, tupuranga, tetoro. Tetoro mai awaiki. Te matoi kapua ia mai e tātou. Ie koko.
And that was Ava Iki. Continuing on with our Tales of the South Pacific, the next interview you're going to hear is with Lisa Nash. She's from Bend, Oregon. And I met Lisa on the other side of the island from Avarua, where the first folks we were talking to lived. This, where we were was near a good snorkeling beach. And across the road from the water, there's a little stand where a couple of wonderful native women sell jams and chutneys and sauces from the fruit that's grown on the island there. So I was standing around nearby when I saw Lisa signing the Mama's guest book, and she wrote Bend, Oregon. So naturally, I went over to introduce myself to her. And we had a hard time getting the interview actually set up because the bus didn't get me there before she left for work, but I caught up with her at the Saturday market in Avarua, and she was staffing a table there that told people about the work that she does at the Honey Foundation Veterinary Clinic. So that's what we'll hear next.
I'm here at the cultural market in Rarotonga, Cook Islands, and I have the pleasure to speak with a young woman from Bend, Oregon. Lisa, say hello.
Hello.
Hi there. Glad to have met you. And you are volunteering with the Honey Foundation, is that right?
Yes, the Esther Honey Foundation.
Tell us a little bit about it.
It's the only vet services in the Cook Islands. We service all 15 of the Cook Islands. We've been here for 10 years. And it's a nonprofit organization, entirely volunteer and donation-based.
Wonderful. And I understand you're a recent graduate from the U of O, is that right?
Yes, I did my undergraduate in biochemistry just prior to coming here.
And so how did you find out about this organization and decide to come?
The U of O has a program through IE3 internships that alerted me to the fact that there was Esther Honey organization in the Cook Islands. But I'd already graduated, so I didn't need the credits. So I just contacted Esther Honey directly and came here to volunteer.
That's wonderful. Tell us a little bit about some of the experiences you've had since you've been here. Was there a lot of culture shock, for example, that you experienced?
I wouldn't say there was a lot of culture shock, but I definitely had to slow down and take things as they come and realize that appointments are a lot more flexible here than they may be at home. And the first time I came here, the first week I was here, I met with the Ministry of Agriculture, and I was a little bit intimidated just coming here and meeting with one of the top organizations. But then I got to the meeting, and he was wearing a Hawaiian-style shirt and it was barefoot, so it wasn't as intimidating as I thought.
That's great. So you saw pretty quickly, I guess, that people are really relaxed here. It takes us visitors quite a while to learn that, but you found that out right away. Yeah. Well, what are some of give us a taste of what a typical day is like for you at the animal clinic.
Okay, we open up at 9 in the morning, and we start with just cleaning and feeding and medicating all the animals. And then any animals that are going to be in for surgery are dropped off at 9 o'clock that day. So we log all those animals in and get them prepared for their surgeries. And then surgery starts. It usually finishes probably around 1 o'clock, I would say. And Monica, the other intern, and I assist the vets during surgery. And then we take a short lunch break sometimes. Sometimes we don't make it to lunch. And then in the afternoon, we do any consultations or other appointments that we might have, and people come and pick up the animals. And we usually leave the clinic around 5 o'clock most days.
I see here at the market, you have a station where you're wanting people to know that how many animals you've treated so far, how many animals sterilized. Do you find that people here have the same attitude toward their pets as we would have back home?
I would say by and large there's a much more casual attitude. The animals are not usually confined to the owner's house. They're allowed to roam free, and they may get into trouble. They may cause trouble out there, but the owners don't seem to be too concerned about what they're doing.
We've noticed a lot of dogs around. In fact, we saw a dog snorkeling the other day with a couple of people. Are those pets, do you suppose, the ones that we'll see running around kind of by themselves?
Most of the animals here actually do have owners. They just are allowed to run free on the streets and go wherever they please. And the dogs here actually fish. They get in groups together and fish out on the reef, so not unusual to see them snorkeling.
Whoa, that's pretty exciting. Another thing that I saw, we went up to the falls and we heard kittens crying. And would those be feral cats, do you suppose? Or would someone have dumped off a kitty litter up by the falls?
I don't have any idea. There's not a lot of houses up there, so my guess is that they would be feral cats.
And the other animal I've encountered are the feral chickens. They're quite something. But you don't probably get a whole lot of animals other than cats or dogs, do you?
It's definitely predominantly dogs and cats. We've seen horses, goats, pigs, seabirds, a few chickens in there. So we'll help whatever comes our way.
Uh-huh, that's great. Well, would you have anything to say to other young people who might be wanting to come here and volunteer? What sort of things should they expect on Rarotonga?
It's a great place. It's gorgeous. The people are great. The weather is great. But it is quite expensive, and it's hard to live here as a volunteer just because of the cost of everything. But it's definitely a worthwhile experience, and you are making a difference when you're here, so I would definitely look into it.
Great. So you've experienced the difference you can make by being here helping out.
Yeah, every day we help more animals, you know. It makes a big difference, and people are so happy to have the services here. When they come to pick up the animals, they're just very grateful that you could help them in any way.
Well, thank you very much for your time.
So that was what I was able to experience when I was at Rarotonga and talking with a few folks there who are Northwesterners. The time has just turned to 6:31, and you're listening to KBOO at 90.7 FM in Portland. So it's my pleasure now to turn to another South Sea island, or group of islands, I think. And the place that we're going to travel to next in our travels is Tonga. And I'm here with with Afa. And Afa, welcome to KBOO.
Yes, I'm very excited and happy to be here with you at this hour. So that you can ask questions or whatever you think about Tonga.
Thank you so much. And I want to commend you for being able to come in at kind of the last minute. And we thought you would have a companion, but that person hasn't come in. So you have it on your shoulders, if you would be so kind as to tell all our listeners about Tonga. I guess I want to ask first about the name of your country.
Yes, the name of my country is Tonga. You pronounce it as in English as Tonga, but
Tonga.
The name is Tonga.
Tonga.
Yeah.
I'll try to remember
that. That's the pronunciation.
Tonga. Yes, go ahead.
And it means south.
South?
Yeah.
Ah.
That's what it means, literally.
South from where?
South from, you have the north of the Pacific. South of the Pacific.
Well, is that where your ancestors came from then?
No. Our ancestors were believed to come from Southeast Asia.
Uh-huh.
And they traveled maybe from Malaysia, down Indonesia, uh-huh. and down to New Zealand, spread out to the Cook Islands and Western Samoa, American Samoa, and then to the southwest of Western and American Samoa, that's where Tonga is.
Ah.
And to be exact, geographically, Tonga is located between 21 and 23 south latitudes.
Ah.
And 175 east longitude and 180 east longitudes. And that is, you know, on the other side is the zero meridian, which is Greenwich. Greenwich?
Yes, Greenwich. And you're on a different day than...
Yeah.
And
the other side is the dateline.
Yes.
180 east longitude.
So when people have, when it's Monday in Rarotonga on the Cook Islands, is it Tuesday in Tonga then?
Yes.
Oh my.
Right. That's right.
I bet that confuses a lot of people.
Yes, because whenever you cross the,
is it the
international dateline,
yes.
there's a change in time.
Oh, yeah.
Or even when you come to Western Samoa,
mm-hmm.
it's a different day altogether.
Oh, my goodness. So if people are traveling, and actually I did. I left Rarotonga one day, and I flew over Tonga, but then down south to New Zealand, and it was the next day and just a few hours later.
Yes, sometimes it is quite confusing for people who don't understand geography.
Yes.
I think the same thing is going to happen when you cross the Greenwich, the zero
yes,
longitude.
Yes, yes.
There has to be a different day.
Well, I'm going to just break for a minute, and I see that Betty is here.
Yes.
Have a seat, Betty, and welcome. We're glad that you could make it, and we're just going to have Betty put on those earphones. They're not the best because we're KBOO is a volunteer organization, but can you hear us?
Yes.
Okay, great. Well, before we ask Betty to join us, Afa, we were talking about where Tonga, Tonga.
Tonga, yes.
Tonga, where Tonga is, and a little bit about where the ancestors came from, which was from the west, I guess, but Indonesia.
Yes, there were two theories about where the Tongans were coming from.
Uh-huh.
Firstly, historians said that Tongans came from Malaysia or perhaps Southeast Asia. And even China and Japan, that's where we come from. When we come through the islands, to New Zealand, Samoa, and then to Tonga. And the other belief is that the people of Tonga came from South America.
I think I've heard that they started from Peru and they went to Indonesia and then they came back.
Have you ever heard of the Kon-Tiki expedition?
Kon-Tiki, yes.
Yeah, they were trying to prove that the Polynesian people come from South America.
Yes.
And it was very interesting when during the explorers were coming to Tonga, some of them stole the people from Tonga and bring back to South America.
Really?
As slaves.
Oh, my goodness. So some of your ancestors got taken as slaves to South America.
Yeah.
Do you know what happened after that?
Well, no. No. Mm-hmm. There has not been anybody who even tried to identify where the people went to. But that's what happened.
Yes.
I think it happens when America was being engaged and involved in slavery trade.
Oh, you think so? Yes, we've certainly had our bitter history of slavery.
Yeah.
Well, I'd like to hear a little bit more about Tonga today. I understand that it's the smallest kingdom in the world. Is that correct?
Yes, I think so.
And Betty, please feel free to jump in whenever you'd like.
Okay, thank you.
Okay. Would you tell us a little bit about the kingdom? And then
we have been never have been colonized by any country.
Uh-huh.
Although that there were people who came up to Tonga. The first explorers to discover Tonga were from Poland. Not Poland, I beg your pardon. They are Dutch, Holland.
Oh, Holland, yes. They made it to New Zealand, too,
yeah.
I guess.
1616, they discovered Tonga. And there are other explorers like Tasman and Lemur.
Oh, yes.
And I think those are the first, really first one. But the more recent one is like Captain Cook.
He got around, didn't he?
Yeah. Visited Tonga three times.
Ah.
1770, 1773, and 1777.
Well, how did those people from the European countries who came and stayed for a little while, how did they affect your ancestors, the people who were there when those people arrived?
Yeah, it was a very interesting history about that. You know, when those people, the explorers, came to Tonga, they tried to exchange things that they need from the native people of Tonga.
Mm-hmm.
And they exchange the food that the Tongans bring with even a little nail for a bunch of whole bananas.
Oh,
because the Tongans see in the nail something. They use the nail to make up the bows for their arrows.
Yes, okay. So your ancestors were willing to trade the things that you had a great deal of for some of these useful articles that the European people brought.
Yes, they did.
Yeah. Well,
If I may add, too, I think the Tongan or the Polynesian is general, the very gifted people. Mm-hmm. And I think because unlike the Western civilization, working, they read patterns and follow. The Polynesian are gifted with talent, like I can just look at a dress and go home and imagine and end up sewing that dress exactly like that or better.
Ah, so your people, your ancestors and you today in present times have a visual memory I wonder if that's like you had to read all those, the blowing of the winds, the travel from island to island. You had to, your ancestors had to know how to get there from here, and there had to be something to help.
Well, if I may allow to back up a little bit.
Oh, please.
Before the explorer coming to the islands, they didn't believe in God. So they have their own gods, so superstitions kind of rule their lives.
Mm.
And so they have a god of the ocean. Correct me if I'm wrong.
Yes, that's
and
right.
So as to answer your question, for example, my great-grandfather still had that, but he didn't have a compass, except that he'll just feel the ocean. And then he, by the temperature of and by the waves, he can tell we're in a certain place, and he can tell there's a lot of fish in this area, or it's deeper here. I mean, just the way he feels, because of the way he feels the ocean plus the moon. And so there's combination of things that the Tongans, I guess, have learned from the past, and also just because they're not, well, they can read because, you know, it wasn't introduced in then, but they certainly can figure things out.
Yes.
Like Offa said about the nails, they can make bows and arrows. Because nail, they can tell it's stronger than wood, so it won't be breakable.
Yes.
So they think this is a good weapon type thing.
Mm-hmm.
So they're creative in that way and in that fashion. And on the same token, it does help them survive.
I see. Well, so it's both something that you can see, like you're very good at remembering patterns, as you said, and your ancestor, your great-grandfather could feel, could use his sense of how the water felt to him, so in many ways.
Yes, and for instance, we don't have, like here, unlike a developed country, where you have the cyclone forecast.
Oh, yes.
But, you know, my great-grandfather, and I'm sure Alphys too, can tell by the certain way the bees are flying or the birds are flying, or, you know, a certain way the animals, you know, reaction, they can tell there is a storm coming.
Yes.
Before I came here to the United States in the 1988, I think it was exact year was 1986. There was an expedition that came from Tahiti on a boat known as the Hokulea. And they were just doing the same kind of sailing, using the stars in the night, and they look at the sun at the daytime, mm-hmm. and also the moon in the nighttime, together with the stars. And they know a particular place that they are in by looking at the stars and figure it out. Because every night, that's their method of going from places to places.
Yes.
They look at the star and the sun, and also the currents.
The currents of the waters.
How fast they travel from place to place. They know it.
Yes.
And even when they feel it, because sometimes the surface of the sea is very cold, they know the currents bring up the cold water from under there.
Ah.
It's very strong. But when it is hot, maybe the sun is hot. And they know certain places by combining all these factors. And they know where they are exactly where.
Oh, I wish we had more time. Luckily, and we'll talk about this later, there's going to be a Tongan program on KBOO next week, beginning on the 28th, Tuesday the 28th.
Yeah, that's right.
Well, I know that you brought some music. In fact, you brought a couple of pieces of Tongan music.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm wanting to talk, for us to talk some more, but let's play the first one now, and then we can have a little more time to talk.
Just before we play the music, I just want to remind everybody that we have an exposure. We have a Tongan community, and Offer is a member of the board, and we have the information available for anybody that wants to be interested more or want to find out more about Tonga in particular. So we have that community. We have that opportunity available here.
Yes, I'm so glad you're mentioning that. And I think after the music, I would like to hear more about Tongans in Portland and what's happening.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Yes.
Would you tell us about the music we just heard?
Yeah, that piece of music was played by the Young Brothers, and that was one of the dancing songs. I don't know what you technically call it, but that's what we call it.
Is it the music that...
It's like hula.
Like hula.
It's, yeah.
And in Tonga, what do you call it? Do you have a different name for that dancing?
Yes, it is Tau Olunga.
Tau Aluna.
Tau Olunga.
Oh, Tau Aluna.
Yes.
Okay. Would you like to say a little bit more? Well, let's talk about Tonga community here now, and then we'll go back and talk about, here's some of the music later. But how did you come here to Portland? Let's start with you, Betty.
Thank you very much. I came here for further education, and I had a brother that lived in San Francisco. And my folks, I came here in the 73, so I graduated from high school. And
here in Portland?
No, I came here to San Francisco.
San Francisco, you graduated.
And that's where I was. So I went to the school here, and my mom and my dad came for my graduation, and then she passed away, and then I moved on to Portland, Oregon.
Did you know some people here in Portland?
No, I didn't know any Tongans. I was here for about 2.5 before I met some Tongans, and one of them happened to be my husband.
Oh, that was lucky. May we ask his name?
His name is Henele Muli'aumalu Pulopuna.
Ah, it sounds so beautiful. I'm not going to try to say it, but it's a lovely name.
Thank you.
Well, and then so you were here... some years before you came along over to Portland, is that right?
Yeah, that's right. And I first came to the United States in 1988. I used to be a teacher for 17 years back in Tonga.
Oh, what ages of people did you teach?
Well, I teach, we have a different system of grades.
Uh-huh.
In Tonga, we call class.
Okay.
Buddhist class 1 to class 7, that's primary.
Oh.
Or elementary.
Okay, yeah.
And then we have the middle school for 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have the high school, but we call it in Tonga college.
Ah.
So it might be confusing, but there's... We have a different system.
Yes. Well, I imagine there are many differences between Tonga and here. You do you have? Could you talk a little bit about the culture in the or the politics, perhaps, in the land that you left?
Yes. Politically, Tonga has been since 1950 AD, BC rather. Have been ruled by Aho Eitu, that is the first court king of Tonga.
Ah.
And since then, that was how the historians started with the history of Tonga.
Ah.
And then through the... in history, we have three lines of kings.
Mm-hmm.
It was originally the Tu'i Tonga first. And then secondly, the Tu'i Hatakalawa. And now, and third one, which is now the present line of kings, mm-hmm. is the Tu'i Kanakupolu.
Mm-hmm.
And our king now is, his name is Taufa Ahau Tupou the Fourth. And he's a big king. It's quite mm-hmm. great. Maybe weighing something like 400 pounds.
Ah.
But he really exercised himself. He went snorkeling and fishing and do all sorts of sport. Actually, when he was in college or high school,
mm-hmm.
he got a record on high jump, a pole vault.
Ah.
And... he used to do that throughout his life. And I think he's about something like 87 now.
Ah, so
and
strong.
We understand, yeah, we understand that he's so involved and interested in exercising, and that's why he lived a long life.
Yes.
If I may add a little bit about that.
Yes.
Also, Tonga is a monarchy, like Alpha has mentioned. We also have the three parts of the country, just like U.S. We have the justice, and we also have the legislative assembly. And however, the king has the power of veto. So whatever passes is always concluded by the king. And Tonga is a freedom. You know, Tonga is a free country. It's not a dictatorship per se,
mm-hmm.
even though we have a monarchy as a ruler.
Mm-hmm.
And we have... representing from the people and from the nobles, because I don't know if we had mentioned that, but there is three level of class. Like, so you have the king and you have the nobles, and then you have the common.
Ah.
And so languages are tailored according to each class, like the king and the nobles, and then the common. And
can they understand each other?
Yes, we can understand each other, but like the language that. If we were interviewing a nobility here, we would use a different language in Tongan.
I see.
And, of course, the king, we would use a different language. And, of course, the common, unlike the Americans, where the language is only one.
Mm-hmm. We have slang, but that's probably different than what you're talking about.
And because of that, our Tonga is very, very respectful people.
Ah, yes.
We also put the elders... You know, senior citizen on the nobility level.
Oh, that's wonderful. So you respect your elders.
Yeah, very respectful and very polite people,
mm-hmm.
very friendly, just because of our culture.
Yes. Well, you know, there's so much I'd like to hear about, and I'm looking at the clock over there ticking away. I don't know if we're going to have enough time to play the other music, but... am I correct that starting next week, starting next Tuesday, there will be a regular Tongan hour on KBOO?
Yes.
So
it will be on Tuesday 28th at 1 o'clock to 2 o'clock.
1 o'clock to 2 o'clock in the afternoon. I know I'm going to be listening, and I hope that people who are listening tonight will tell other people, but you're probably going to advertise it some more beyond just this program.
Absolutely.
Yes, yes. Well, so one of the things that that I don't know much about is the local community. How big, how many Tongans do you think are here in the area?
Well, I think there's a small, not so many, but perhaps 3,000 to between 3,000 and 4,000.
Hmm. Well, that sounds like enough people to get up some games and things when you get together.
Yeah, that's right.
But you also have part of your work helping Tongan folks who need some help from others, is that correct?
Yes, that's right. We started this community last year, maybe in October or somewhere around there.
Mm-hmm.
And we started meetings every month in issues like immigration, social activities, and get together. Mm-hmm. You know each other, and even put up some dancing and food and socializing ourselves and get to know each other better.
That's a wonderful idea, because I could imagine some people could feel quite cut off coming to a place which is so different.
Yes, it's like a revival of kinship relationship as we did at home. And it is very good, and you're very happy to see other people almost every week.
Oh, yes. Could you tell us a little bit about the kinship relations, or whatever you wanted to say?
Well, I was just going to mention that one of the tasks of the community is to help the youth and also help the students continue education.
Yes.
Because in America, there's plenty of opportunity for education. And the Tongans, like I said, as I started in the program, that they're very gifted people. And so that's part of the community here, is to do a little policing on the kids that go to school. And so we want to make sure that they graduate, and want to make sure they go on to colleges. Because the Tongan in the South Pacific, they're very academically high achievement. And so the potential is there, but the kids just need to know the direction. So that's part of the task of the Tongan community. Therefore, the president had formed a committee where we're going to monitor the students' status at school, monitor their grades so that when they graduate from high school, they continue on to either a technical school, but at least a higher education.
Yes.
So the whole idea is our next generation will be better.
That's wonderful, and goodness knows all kids need help and need to learn about how to succeed where they are. Well, we just have a couple of minutes left, so I'm going to a couple of little pieces of business here. Thank you so much for coming in tonight, Arfa and Betty. And once again, the Tongan, is it called the Tongan Hour? Or what is the name of the program?
Yes.
The Tongan Hour will be on starting this Tuesday, February 28th, from 1 to 2 p.m. right here on KBOO. And before we have our closing music, I just want to say that this KBOO program has been made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from, in other words, Women's Books and Resources, serving you from its new location at 8 Northeast Killingsworth at Williams. In other words, is your local nonprofit feminist bookstore and resource center, offering community space, gifts, tools for the revolution, women's writings, and much more. The number is 503-232-6003, or, in other words, .org.